Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, Good, Bad, and Crazy Martinis for Conservatives. And Jim, it always puts a smile on your face when you see Democrats in a food fight with one another. We shouldn't be the only party that has to deal with this during a major election year. At the Nevada Democratic Convention over the weekend, it was a raucous affair. We'll explain just how raucous in just a moment, but the moment getting the most attention, I think, and it's certainly very delicious to those of us who are only too happy to see Barbara Boxer retiring at the end of this year. Barbara Boxer speaking at the Nevada convention, I believe simply on behalf of Hillary, but perhaps just trying to unify Democrats. That was the message of her speech. That didn't go very far and certainly didn't go very well. Here's part of it.
I bring a message from Bernie Sanders, and I bring a message from Hillary Clinton. We need civility in the Democratic Party. Civility. Because the whole future of the country is at stake. Now, when you boo me, you're booing Bernie Sanders. Go ahead. You're booing Bernie Sanders. Bernie is my friend. You want to boo Bernie? Boo me. Go on. Go on.
That's a nice projection there. If you're booing me, you're really booing the guy you want to win. That's really convincing there. Jim, the Wall Street Journal reports that organizers of the Nevada State Democratic Convention said they had to rush to wrap up the, quote, unruly and unpredictable event on Saturday after security became an issue and objects, including chairs, were thrown. State party officials said authorities at the Paris Casino in Las Vegas informed them around 10 p.m. local time that they could no longer provide the necessary security for the event, where tensions between supporters of Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and party leaders flared up. The convention was scheduled to end at 7 p.m. As far as we know, no one was seriously hurt, so that's also good news. But to watch the Democrats go through this dysfunctional moment in public is very fun.
Greg, I think you had the tone a bit wrong. It really is. Sadly, no one was seriously hurt. And, you know, to make Senator Boxer feel better, maybe they weren't booing. Maybe it was, ooh, that's a good argument. Ooh, she makes a good point. Ooh, we like civility. But in most likelihood, no, it wasn't. I understand, Greg, that chairs were thrown. No reports that Geraldo Rivera was in the vicinity. And finally, so when we had that really awful, the near riot in Chicago, right? The rally that Trump was expected to have, the Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, angry lefty protesters showed up, disrupted the event. The event organizers and police could not guarantee security, and so they basically had to cancel the event. And Trump said that this wasn't his fault. This wasn't his supporters. They were all totally perfectly innocent. It was all the fault of Bernie Sanders supporters. Well, Greg, I assume it's pretty safe to assume there weren't a lot of Trump supporters at the Nevada Democratic Party gathering. So maybe there's a little bit of truth to what he was saying here, that maybe some Sanders supporters do get rambunctious and violent and aren't willing to comport with the rules of operating of traditional politics and things like that. We'll see more of this, but you're right. For a media that loves to talk about the continuing food fight on the Republican side, on the Democratic side, it's still going on. And as I've observed, Greg, it's like, whenever there's a fight amongst Republicans, the media is like, yeah, did you hear what that guy said about you? Hit him harder, hit him harder. And when Democrats fight, the media always treats it like you go over to your friend's house and the parents start fighting. Like, oh, did you can't Bernie and Hillary just get along? God, they avert their eyes. It's awkward and inconvenient. They just try to let's just put this behind us as quickly as possible. So I expect we'll see more of this in the coverage of the day. But like you and I, we should probably point attention and say, hey, wait a minute. There are two very divided Democratic parties out here. And this idea that, the Democrats all unite sounds an awful lot like whistling past the graveyard amongst some Democratic leaders right now.
Speaking of uniting or not uniting, let's move on to our bad martini now. And Reince Priebus, among other officials in the Republican Party, from what I've read, state party officials are also wrapping the Never Trump folks over the knuckles over their refusal to get behind the presumptive Republican nominee. At the same time, though, you have other folks who are very much in the Never Trump camp, but particularly Mitt Romney and Bill Kristol, who are very public with the fact that they do not want this to be the only real choice for this year's presidential campaign. Ben Sasse has said the same. We've talked about that. He says we shouldn't have to settle for two terrible choices. The reports over the weekend says that Romney has reached out to Ben Sasse, who is already a no. Also reached out to John Kasich as a third-party candidate, which I'm sure would really stir the conservative grassroots who don't like Donald Trump. So, Jim, this on the one hand looks very desperate. On the other hand, I understand why they're doing it. I just don't know that they're going to be able to find anyone who's almost guaranteed to lose here.
Yeah, I mean, the first problem with this thinking, Greg, is that if you had some Republican figure with indisputable conservative credentials, but who also is broadly liked and appealing to a wide swath of people, and who the entire, pretty much a good broad chunk of the Republican Party could support and be enthusiastic about. If that were the case, then there would be that person would be the Republican nominee. I mean, some of this is imagine a perfect candidate. Okay, we got that. Then what? You know, the second thing is at one point, Greg, there was talk they're turning to Mark Cuban. and I'm sitting here thinking like, well, if I'm upset that the Republicans have nominated a billionaire known for making controversial statements, not a lot of grounding in policy details, and who's best known for a reality show, I'm not sure it really helps us to write a conservative independent candidacy from a guy who's a billionaire, best known for making controversial statements, who doesn't know a lot about policy, and who's best known for a reality show. That really doesn't strike me as, you know, oh, we put out a new offerings in the buffet table. And they're the exact same offerings that were on before that you found so unappetizing. All of this is kind of moot until somebody says, yeah, I want to do it. And Mitt Romney says he doesn't want to do it. Condi Rice says she doesn't want to do it. Ben Sasse doesn't want to do it. Well, until there's somebody, it's an imaginary candidacy. At some point, I also think that if none of these people want to run, if you decided it's too tough for your family, if you decided that you really see no point in victory, he's not going to win, and so you don't want to do an entirely symbolic gesture. You think you won't have enough money. It'll be like sound like a joke. You won't be operating on a shoestring. If all of that, you know, then let the people have that conclusion. Like, I don't think a call from Mitt Romney is going to change your mind. I don't think Ben Sasse saying you're great, as much as I like these guys, I don't think that anybody can be really, you know, nagged into running for the presidency. It's got to be something you want to do inside. As much as we may love the Sherman-esque statement and the idea of drafting someone, the idea that you find the duties of the presidency enormous and daunting is probably says a good thing about you, that you recognize how serious the job is and you're not just doing this to reward your own ego. But at this point, it really does seem like desperate flailing. And I think highly of almost all these people. But until you have an actual candidate who wants to run, this seems like a giant moot exercise, Greg.
Jim, one other question I want to run past you here, and obviously there's a lot of people who are uninterested in either one of these people, meaning Clinton and Trump, to be president. On one side, not doing anything to really help Donald Trump, certainly, is one thing, to stay out of the fray, essentially. But to take a step that a lot of people would interpret as only hurting Trump and tacitly helping Clinton, you would not only still likely lose, but perhaps take on more blame than is trying to be thrown at the Never Trump crowd right now. What do you make of the reluctance on that front?
Greg, does the term stabbed in the back have any significant historical resonance there?
Caesar? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, people who, if you believe, as I do, that nominating Trump was a mistake, well, the Republican Party primary voters have largely spoken. Everyone else has suspended their campaign. And now we see how it works. And ironically, there have been some polls that have indicated that Trump is running surprisingly close against Hillary Clinton, that maybe Republicans have such disdain and distaste for Hillary Clinton that they'll unify against this guy, unify behind Trump and hope for the best. If you run that third candidate and that third candidate gets some actual traction, they get a level of support beyond nominal stuff, then it says something. Then it will be it will basically have an indicator that, okay, there was this conservative group that was never willing to rectify itself with Trump. But at the same time, it also guarantees Hillary's election, and it gives everyone from the Trump world a reason to blame, well, it's not our fault. It's not Trump's fault. It's not that Trump wasn't good enough, smart enough, you know, detailed politics. He wasn't conservative. It'll all be the Never Trumpers' fault. And some folks like Breitbart's John Nolte have already said they're already blaming Never Trump if he doesn't win. The only scenario in which Trump doesn't win the presidency is if these like bunch of people on Twitter keep using a hashtag. They're the ones who are going to be blamed. So on the one hand, we kind of know there's always going to be scapegoating in effect. On the other hand, if it's just pure straight up Clinton versus Trump and Clinton beats Trump, if you're like me and you never want this party to ever do this again, then it's easy to point to this and say it didn't work. This is not the route to a majority. This is not the route to the Oval Office. We have to try something different. If you give them that excuse, then you'll have a much harder time persuading the party that this was a mistake and we need to go in a different direction. So I'm skeptical of. Now, if you had a really great, you know, independent conservative candidate, terrific. That becomes a different story. But at this point, it just feels like we're driving around in circles looking for somebody and unable to pick up any hitchhikers. So at some point, that might be the next year. You know, Crystal and Romney and Sass are in a car. Hey, anybody need a ride? There you go. Guess what? You're now our nominee.
Speaking of trying to change things or not change things, the crazy martini, let's go. I'll go back to the 90s. Hillary Clinton saying over the weekend once again in more clear terms than ever that if she's elected president, Bill Clinton's going to be in charge of the economy. Quote, my husband, who I'm going to put in charge of revitalizing the economy, because you know he knows how to do it, and especially in places like coal country and inner cities and other parts of the country that have really been left out. I've told my husband he's got to come out of retirement and be in charge of this because you know he's got more ideas a minute than anybody I know, she said while talking about manufacturing and jobs. She's campaigning ahead of the Kentucky vote on Tuesday. So, Jim, I don't think no matter what she does, she's going to win many friends in coal country at this point. But apparently the internet's going to get invented and expanded again if she wins. So that's interesting news.
You know, Greg, can you reuse Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow as your campaign song if you're literally asking people to think about yesterday? on the one hand, again, proud feminist Hillary Clinton promising that I'm going to put my husband in charge of the economy. Totally standing on her own 2 feet and not running on her husband's coattails. But then the third thing, you know, and we've pointed out how, you know, Bill's looking a little long in the tooth these days.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he spends a lot of time on an island, Greg.
Yes.
And, really takes a lot out of him, I hear. So Bill Clinton, like, it just seems very odd to see her saying this. We're going to take it back to the 1990s. You know, we're going to go back to that. He's the one who needs to revitalize the economy, which is an acknowledgement the economy needs to be revitalized. Greg, do you know what President Obama was doing on Sunday?
Giving a commencement speech, right?
He was giving a commencement address at Rutgers University, in which he declared, by almost every measure, America is better and the world is better than it was 50 years ago or 30 years ago or even 8 years ago. As I'm about to say in a forthcoming piece on National Review Online, Greg, the only people who disagree with that assessment are Hillary Clinton and her supporters, Bernie Sanders and his supporters, Donald Trump and his supporters, Gary Johnson and his supporters, and basically every presidential candidate and everybody. No one thinks the world is better off than it was 8 years ago, 30 years ago, 50 years ago. At her rally in Kentucky, she had Steve Beshear, the governor of Kentucky. I'm not kidding. His remarks are, we live right now in some of the most dangerous times that this world has ever seen. Hillary's message is, things are terrible. That's why you need us in charge. And Obama's like, no, you've never had it so good. Isn't it terrific? And even more, like, no, here's the great thing. Obama's message to the Rutgers grads, it's part of human nature, especially in times of change and uncertainty, to want to look backwards and long for some imaginary past when everything worked and the economy hummed and all politicians were wise and every kid was well-mannered and America pretty much did whatever it wanted around the world. Guess what? It ain't so. The good old days weren't that great, unquote. Should they send memos to each other about what they're going to talk about? Because here's Obama saying, the good old days weren't that good. And here's Clinton saying, we're going to prank you back to the 1990s. They can't both be true. So there you go. We bring it full circle, Greg, to our first martini of Democrats fighting with each other.
That's amazing. Just a few months ago, she was like locked in as the third Obama term. And now that Bernie Sanders won't go away, she's joining him as the everything's terrible crowd. So she pivots better than Steph Curry on two good knees.
Very good. Very good.
Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.